This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world. You're listening to The Kevin Kelly Show, exclusively here on placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world. And now here's your host, the voice of Ring of Honor, Mr. Kevin Kelly. When you're
on a holiday, you can't. So tonight, here on episode 10 of The Kevin Kelly Show, I'm going to be interviewing a guy that is a zillion times better an announcer than I am. He actually works for a professional sports team. Not just any sports team, but the best basketball organization in NBA history, the Boston Celtics. Sean Grandy is our guest here tonight on The Kevin Kelly Show. Can you tell I'm excited? Now, why is Sean Grandy going to be on the show tonight? We're not just going to talk hoops. I'm sure we are. But he's a lifelong wrestling fan. And I met Sean a year ago, August, when Ring of Honor was in Providence. And actually, I think I talked to him first because we have a mutual friend in David Lagana. But anyway, so Sean Grandy is going to be on the show, and I'm really excited about it because he's a much better announcer than I am. Maybe I'll finally learn something. At least we can hope so, right? But we've made it through 10 episodes. Well, we haven't made it through 10 episodes yet because, again, this could be the night where I have a heart attack and die on the air to the delight of my producer, Justin Rosero. Justin, would you like it if I had a heart attack and died on the air?
I'd like a heads up so we could produce a documentary for the website. Kind of like, you know, The Ultimate Warrior. They have that whole thing going on.
Sure. How about this? What if, all right, so I'm, you know, we're doing something live, and a la Jerry the King, I clutch the chest and drop over dead. Are you going to put the camera on me, or are you going to make sure I get help?
Well, can it be both?
Okay. You'd make sure you were getting all this on film, right, so I don't sue?
Yeah.
Okay.
Of course.
That's what they
did.
Already
filming it right now. Put your pants
on. All right. Jarrah, stay on with me here because I want to talk. I read the recap courtesy of my good buddy Mike Johnson over at PW Insider, who does a great job. He and Dave Shearer, I've known them for years. Mm. They predate my friendship with you by over a decade. And in many respects, pioneers, along with Dave Meltzer, in wrestling reporting. So I always think they do a good job. And they don't bring an agenda to the table. They seem to, you know, but again, they're fans. So nobody really, I read the recap of this Triple H interview where he talked all about NXT today.
Yeah.
And the one thing that bothered me is they just have to change people when they get up to the main roster. No matter what they do or how successful they are in NXT or even before NXT.
Well, who have they changed? What's your examples?
There was a theme that went throughout the interview where he talked about, you know, well, will it play here? And he used Bray Wyatt, for example. He used Cesaro for an example, Cesaro. And didn't point to specifics, but it was vague. Did you read the recap of the interview?
I have not yet.
Okay.
Read it now. Go ahead.
It troubled me just because I look at wrestling talent like it's an artist. Everyone's art is different. You know, there might be a classically trained artist who might have learned under a specific artist whose style was, you know, his own or her own. But that doesn't mean that that artist is then going to become a clone of the person that they learned under. Part of the art is that they are to be an individual. It doesn't do me any good. And why I'm talking about this is because I'm going to the world famous Pretty Boy Larry Sharp's Monster Factory this Saturday for the very first time in my professional career to first of all, pay respects to one of the pioneers in wrestling training, one of the greatest wrestling schools ever that has turned out so many products for generations now. And I'm going there just to do a promo class. Not going to have anything to do with wrestling. That's not what I teach. But what I teach is how guys talk on camera and how to be produced and what to look for and how to be, because that spoken word is so important. So I teach the spoken word. But I don't, and I'll give guys guidelines and I'll give them guidance. But there's not one way to do it. But reading Triple H's interview today, I got the feeling that there is their way of doing it, and that's it. And that's troubling to me. Because that top-down control over talent is what has put the WWE where they are today. Again, we're not holding, charity car washes for them. They are the absolute best at what they do in terms of production, in terms of lighting, in terms of presentation. It looks flawless each and every show. Each and every show. Where it always loses me and loses a lot of people is sort of on the creative end, where the wrestling is not the focus, it's the storytelling, and I understand that, but there seems to be that cookie cutter approach, that cookie cutter look, the style, whatever. Everybody can be different in their own ways. Bray Wyatt is different than John Cena, who is different than Cesaro. But what's working in NXT might not necessarily work up on the big stage. And that's about that control. They can't let people just be themselves.
Now, see, I'm reading this and I don't really get that vibe.
That's kind of what I got.
See, I'm getting the opposite, because he's saying that he was telling Cesaro to work the same as he was doing in NXT to carry that up to Raw and SmackDown. He noticed he was working differently and he told him to do otherwise.
What about Bray Wyatt?
He said he's just becoming comfortable. You come up here, it's a whole different world. Company does things do their own way. It's big time intimidating. But he's saying he worked. I mean, they didn't really change what he was, did they? Mm. I thought he's doing pretty much what he was doing down there.
All right. See, I didn't get that.
It's worded a little bit funny. And maybe he was making an overall point that you may be absolutely correct on, that, you know, they put this guy in these guys' heads that it's a different game, a different ball game, and you gotta.
Right.
I can't think of anyone they've really changed. It's almost been to the detriment sometimes.
But what they do is they change everything. They
from
never,
NXT to the big roster, or do you mean
No. From when they get them in.
Okay, all right.
I agree with that culture.
I thought you meant from NXT coming up to WWE, they changed.
That was kind of what I wrote, and especially about that one phrase about, whoa, this is the big time and this is different, and you know, they just do what works. Just let them be the artists that they are. Let them be. Guide them, but let them be. And there seems to be there just seems to be that overall heavy hand of control, which I might have read more into than there actually is. But I have gotten that feeling and that vibe since they bring everybody in and they change everybody's name. And that just bugs me. It still bugs me. I don't know why.
Well, let me ask you this. If they end up getting a push and do well, does it clean that up in your eyes? Like, does it bother you that he's Antonio Cesaro and a little bit different presentation, but he's getting a push and he's super over and they're using him well? Does it, you know, do you lose the anger that you have when they first come in and they switch them all around?
Well, look at the four steps that it took for him to get to where he is now.
Yeah.
And then they had to use Paul Heyman to get him over.
Nah, I'd argue he was over before Heyman, but.
Well, I
think Heyman's actually been, for the first time in maybe his career as a manager, I think Heyman's actually been a little bit of an anchor around.
Really?
Cesaro. Yes, I do. I think he's confusing them. I think he's confusing. I think they're confusing the fans. Is Cesaro supposed to be a face or heel? Because Heyman's kind of a heel elsewhere, but when he's with Cesaro, they're kind of faces. And I thought originally they were doing it to try and make sure the smarter fans were cool with Cesaro, even though they already were. So I don't really get the pairing. Like, I know it's supposed to be like a wink-wink, I'm a Paul Heyman guy and all this shit, but it didn't totally make sense to me, because I feel like Cesaro was on the verge of breaking out as a top face star. and then this seems to just be confusing people. Like, he's still being booked well. He's winning matches, and he looks good, and they're giving him a lot of time on TV. He's impressive. But I just feel like the presentation of him has been odd with Heyman.
Yeah. That's fair. I like it. I guess what happens is that if I like something, and I'll sit down with it, and I'll like it, you know. But if I don't like the approach that WWE takes to developing talent, I seem to focus on the four steps that it took for them to get Cesaro to this point now. And what bothers me about it is that, you know, he came in and he was presented one way, and then he was in the U.S. title and he didn't do anything with him. And it's that constant creative just morass that guys seem to get stuck in, that if they just let them come in and let them be, we know how good this guy can be. He can main event WrestleMania for us. What's the plan to get us there? This, and this. Well, how many WrestleManias is it going to be? Let's have a main event in 3 years. Let's work backwards for 3 years. We know we got him. He's under contract. He's not going anywhere. So let's work backwards from 3 years from now. And let's map out where we want him to be. That's instead of the, you know, kind of that top down, it doesn't work, he's not getting over, he's not getting it approach that had led to so many guys getting released. Now they don't have any choices in the matter because, my God, it's, you know, they don't have anybody left.
A little different than the year we talked about last Wednesday night on the Place to Be podcast. Compare right now to this time in 2002. Radically different.
It is. It's completely different. You know, and like Adam Rose, who the first time that anybody saw that gimmick on NXT, the entrance, it was the greatest thing ever. And now what's happened? What happened in the span of 4 weeks, a month, 6 weeks, whatever it is, 2 months? What happened, JR? How did this guy go from being the most talked about thing to now, like, rumors of him not, it's not working out and he's not getting it?
Well, I think they didn't build it up and make a big enough deal about it that first night. I don't know if they were convinced of it. Maybe they picked the wrong crowd as well. Maybe they should have tried to hold him and have him debut in the South where he's kind of known with the next. I don't know what it was, but he came out and they didn't really build it up, and I didn't really think they got the point across. You know what I mean? It looked like just a bunch of goofs. Like, they didn't really explain what it was that well.
I don't think they really explained it that well on NXT either. I don't remember. It's just entertaining. So either they get behind it or they don't. You know, and I understand. And the one thing I did read into the interview is that Triple H really cares about NXT a lot. He really seems to, which is good. I just think they got to let the guys be themselves even more than they do, and stop changing names and stop having to own and control everything. Just stop it.
What do you think they're going to do with the two international talents they got coming over? Of course, that was a joke.
Who?
I like that, though. It was kind of funny, though.
And then Meltzer's like, Prince Devin.
I'm trolling that nerd Meltzer.
Yeah, I'm joking.
Well, Prince Devin was a four-time in New Japan. Yes, Kenta and Prince Devin. You think they're going to come in as them?
No. No, I don't think so. They'll change him. I think they'll change everybody. And I think they'll do that just to own everybody's gimmick. So if they ever leave, they can't be who they are. I mean, but there are guys that
Punk the last guy that came in without being changed?
Yeah, I think so. Which is one of the reasons why I thought they busted his ball so bad when he was trying to resign. I always thought, and I didn't know this to be true, but I always wondered, is there such, you know, this can't be just about money. They probably want to own his name and he probably won't sign rights over to it. And that's probably a huge sticking point with them, because they must own everything. They must control everything. And I don't get it. I don't understand it. Guys are artists. Let them be artists. If they don't want to display their art here in this gallery anymore, let them go to the gallery down the street. You're not going to go out of business because somebody is displaying someone else's art in another gallery. You're going to find new artists and you're going to bring new pieces of art in that are different and that are fresh and you're going to bring new fans in that have never seen this type of art before. Stop being afraid to express yourself and allow your company to express itself in new ways. Break out of your shell. Stop being constricted by rules that you put in place. And that's where this is now. The WWE way is that way because they created it. This wasn't handed down from Vince Sr. This is Vince Jr.'s doing. And this evolved over time. And as the company became bigger and bigger, the rules and the rigidity became even more entrenched. So let artists display their art, let them be artists, and let them express themselves. And stop trying to control everything that they do. JR, I could not have been more wrong about the stock price. That's not why, that's not what this, or not the stock price, but by the amount that they signed for with NBC.
Rights. Yeah.
Oh, the TV rights is what I was trying to say. I could not have been more wrong. That's not the reason for my rather, you know, strong comments here at the beginning of this episode of the Kevin Kelly Show. This is, you know, although somewhat related, I'm embarrassed. I had egg on my face.
Yeah.
I predicted $1 billion.
I wish I bet $1 billion on the under.
Jeez,
on that,
because right?
I was pretty confident they were not touching $1 billion.
They got it. The money grew by a lot.
I think it was by 50%. Was that the final number? I mean, I think they still did well. The problem all along with the stock and everything else has been expectations. That they set these expectations that were a little unrealistic, and that's what they're now being looked at for, to see if they were misleading investors or whatnot. But I don't think that at all. I think they're just ignorant. I think that was the problem. I think the hyperbole and the hucksterism and all this shit has worked for decades in the world of wrestling because there was no checks and balances in place. But you go public now and you have those checks and balances. You can't go out there and you can't, make things up and kayfabe and lie and think no one's going to call you on it.
So I was a mark just like all the rest of these people.
Oh yeah, big time mark.
I fell into the world of hype.
You may as well have been spitting in the face of Kevin Sullivan back in Sunrise, Florida, whatever tent you were watching Florida Championship Wrestling in.
You be quiet. Don't speak ill of the Taskmaster. Devil himself.
But yes, you were that level of mark with all this. You bought in.
I'll tell you one of my. You want to know one of my greatest mark stories ever?
Yes,
college, okay, 1988. How old were you in 1988? Like three?
What time? What month in 1988?
I think it was like spring.
So it would have been seven.
Okay. So spring of 88 or so, I guess they were still the NWA at the time. Maybe it was 89. Anyway. The NWA comes rolling into Tallahassee, Florida, in the Leon County Civic Center. Yours truly is going to be there, no doubt. So, opening match was, I know Larry Zbyszko was in it because he's the point of the story. Larry Zbyszko against, maybe Brad Armstrong. Good opening match, right? So anyway, Zbyszko's walking down. There's no music at the time, and there's not much reaction for Larry, except for yours truly. Who pretty much just yells, "Larry Zbyszko, you suck. I hate you." Something to that effect. And very loud across the Leon County Civic Center. And he just stopped in the middle. Now, I'm not on the floor. I'm not at ringside. I'm pretty high up. And he stopped his walk and he just looked right at me. And all of my buddies that were there with me at the show that I basically dragged were like, that guy who I don't know just clowned you. Ha ha. So that was my Larry Zbyszko story and me feeling like a goofball. Took me about probably two matches to get back into the show.
And that kicked off three decades of you being embarrassed on wrestling television ever since?
Right. That's how it works. And then Larry Zbyszko and I actually worked together on The Wrestler.
Oh. He was involved in that? What did he do?
Well, at the end of the day, nothing.
Oh, okay.
I got to go back and watch the open again. They had us calling a montage over the magazine montage at the beginning of the movie. And I don't know if any of that actually made air. I kind of hear Larry's voice. I thought I heard mine. I'm not really sure.
What did you think of that finished product of that movie?
I didn't like it at all.
No?
No.
What was your beef with it?
A lot of things. It wasn't an accurate portrayal of independent wrestling. It wasn't an accurate portrayal of a former WWF, let's just say, star, because there's no way. I mean, these guys are basically, their asses are kissed when they come to these little spot shows. They do autograph. They're not doing hardcore matches. They're not getting color. They're not doing any of that stuff. Now, are they, are some of them gassed up? Are they, you know, are their personal lives a mess? Yeah, that's probably very accurate. But, you know, as far as any of that stuff that he did and those types of matches that they were doing, blah, hated it. Hated it. But when they flash out of the montage and they go to the scene of him sitting in the, like, the elementary school room getting dressed, that's very, 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 very accurate.
So was that meant to be like a take on Ric Flair at the time? Because wasn't he doing, remember he was doing the hardcore stuff in WWE and everyone kind of felt it was below him to be kind of whoring himself out at that point?
Could have been. I thought that the movie, and the other part of the thing that bothered me was that this was more about the reclamation of Mickey Rourke and his career than it was about Randy the Ram Robinson. You know what I mean? This fictional character. This was about Darren Aronofsky resurrecting the career of the once great Mickey Rourke. That's what I read into it when I watched
it. What do you think of Marissa Tomei?
Oh, Marissa Tomei is awesome in everything.
I mean, the main two highlights were her in that movie, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Two big moments. Yay.
Glaring highlights.
Big highlights. Beams of highlighting. Yeah. No, that was awesome stuff. Just wasn't my thing. Just at the end of the day, it wasn't my kind of movie. So few of the elements of the movie were very, very real, as in, like, this really happens. And some of it, not at all. Absolutely not.
All right, let me put you on the spot. What is your favorite wrestling or movie starring a wrestler?
Favorite movie starring a wrestler? I never watched any of the Marine or See No Evil or any of those. Starring a wrestler, that's really limiting.
Well, I was going to say wrestling movies, but I don't think there's many other ones. Body Slam, is that the only other one?
Wrestling movie.
Any of the Rocks? Have you seen any of the Rocks movies? The Rundown, Be Cool.
No, none
Red
of
Iron
them.
Gang. How about
Wait a minute, the Tooth Fairy one, right?
Yeah, that was Tooth Fairy.
And the football one.
That's the Gridiron Gang? Yeah.
That was pretty good.
Yeah, Gridiron Gang was solid.
I like that.
How about any of Hogan? Suburban Commando, Mr. Nanny, No Holds
Mr.
Barred?
Mr. Nanny, No Holds Barred, very solid. and what was the 19? It was like, there was that, The Wrestler, that old movie with Ed Asner.
Yeah.
That was, you know, that was like a highlight. And then there's I Like to Hurt People, which I always see the trailer for. I don't know if I've ever seen the whole thing. That's one of my favorites.
All right. How about documentary style, Beyond the Mat?
I love Beyond the Mat.
More realistic to you than, obviously, since it was a documentary. But
it was real.
A better portrayal.
And just, again, one of the greatest sound bites ever.
What about Jake? When he's pissing in the bucket, talking about how the people would vote him in to be mayor of the shit town he was in. That's one of my favorites.
Yeah.
He's pissing in a bucket backstage with his gut hanging out.
That's it.
High on crack. Greg Jake Valentine in the background watching him take a piss.
Yep.
I don't do any tricks.
There you go. Dennis Stamp.
What a jump.
What a cameo.
When are we going to get him on the show? Let's go. Start using your stroke.
We got to book this. This has to happen.
This is what you got to do. You got to get him a Ring of Honor spot because he'll come for that. And then you hook him into the podcast.
I got a better shot of getting him on the podcast, actually.
Get him sitting at ringside with Joe Koff.
That I could do.
The pink shirt.
How do I get him to show up, though?
Well, you book him. He's willing to go places. He's just not booked.
If he's booked,
he will show.
All right. We'll have to book him. All right.
If you book him, Kevin, he will come.
All right. Well, who is booked tonight is Sean Grandy,
he ain't booked.
Who's the Boston Celtics play-by-play announcer and is a huge wrestling fan. So we're going to talk to him about that.
I want you to ask him about Dennis Stamp.
I'm sure he has thoughts on Dennis.
Nice.
And, you know, we'll get into some Cornbread Maxwell talk. I'm not asking Dan Begin's question. I'm sorry. You can take that out right now. I'm not asking that question.
Okay.
Fine, so, and we'll have some fun too. We're already having fun. This is a fun show. This is what we do. It's fun. But right now, before we get Grandy on the phone, are we going to do the Wrestling Flash too?
Yeah. Let's find the show first. How about that?
All right. I know. So we'll have a Wrestling Flash. We'll talk to Sean Grandy. But right now, our good friend JR is going to tell us where you can find the Kevin Kelly Show.
You can find it by visiting PlaceToBeNation.com, clicking the Kevin Kelly Show banner, or the Place to Be podcast, Place to Be Nation podcast banner on the right-hand side, by subscribing to the Place to Be podcast feed on iTunes, or visiting Stitcher.com, subscribing to the Place to Be podcast, or downloading the Place to Be Nation podcast app by hitting placetobe.podbean.com/mobile on your iPhone or iPad. Be sure to follow us at Twitter, @Place2BNation, and @RealKevinKelly, and like us on Facebook at facebook.com/placetobenation. If you have any questions or suggestions for the show, email us at kevinkellyshow@placetobenation.com or tweet at us using #AskKevin with the KK capitalized.
Yeah, do it, or else.
Do it right.
All right, so Wrestling Flash time, and then Sean Grandy here on the Kevin Kelly Show.
I stay fit, I watch what I eat.
And I am Just Rosero with your Wrestling News Flash, brought to you exclusively by WrestleChat.net, your pro wrestling news source. The new issue of Dirty Magazine has a fan Q&A section where Dean Ambrose refers to Seth Rollins and Roman Reigns as his former partners. One of the questions asked Ambrose if there's a superstar that he could make it, that could make him laugh, and he said, "My former partners, Seth Rollins and Roman Reigns. I probably was the class clown of the group, so I'd start joking and ribbing, but those two are hilarious. Daniel Bryan's funny too, but more because he's funny looking." Raj Giri of Wrestling Inc. reports that Dirty is working on a new Randy Savage DVD. The set will feature a documentary on Savage's career. Unlike previous DVDs, several talents have already been interviewed for the piece as well. It was noted that Dirty didn't plan on stripping Daniel Bryan of the World Heavyweight title unless he was going to be out for a while, with Bryan already being advertised for June live events. That may be an indication he'll be back sooner than expected, and him dropping the title at Payback is now unlikely. Regarding the angle of Brie Bella potentially being fired, Renee Young asked Bryan what he would do on the Raw post-show this week. Bryan said it's a tough decision, but he'll do what's right. Finally, TNA has announced that wrestling legend The Great Muta will make his return to the company on June 25th at their Impact tapings at the Manhattan Center in New York City. This will be Muta's first ever time wrestling in New York City. Muta last appeared for TNA at the Lockdown pay-per-view in Miami earlier this year. Once again, visit our good friends at WrestleChat.net each and every day for the latest news, in-depth features, and the Still Real to Us podcast. More for the Kevin Kelly Show, including a visit with the voice of the Boston Celtics, Sean Grandy, after this break.
Because I'm not booked.
You're not going to be here. Why aren't you going to be here? Please be here.
I'm not going to be here, Terry, because I'm not booked. That's a...
Let me know you in the house.
This is the king of old school, Steve Corino, and you've heard all the rumors, and it's true. The Steve Corino Show is here. We talk about wrestling. We talk about baseball, movies, television, anything you want to talk about. New guest every week. That's right, the Steve Corino Show every week here on the Place to Be Nation.
Hey, this is Bauer from The Bauer Show, sports and more. You can check out The Bauer Show podcast every Wednesday and Friday right here at placetobenation.com.
The Bauer Show.
Chad, do you hate it when commercials run and run?
What do you mean, Parv?
Oh, never mind.
Listen to Where the Big Boys Play on placetobenation.com and find us on iTunes. We are the only WCW Supercard exclusive podcast.
Hey, this is Rob Naylor. Do you still enjoy pro wrestling? Believe it or not, I still do. So you better join myself and Will on the Google Wrestling Podcast exclusively at placetobenation.com.
Shit, I wasn't ready. Hey, this is Will. If you like listening and... Shit. Hey, this is Will. If you like listening to guys talk about old school wrestling, follow me and Charles on Wrestling with the Past podcast on Place to Be Nation.
So you got the script, yeah? You all got it?
Yeah.
Oh, that sounds terrible. The Titans are wrestling... Oh, brilliant. Sorry. The Titans are wrestling off.
Pete, I'm a lead analyst for a show at Breakdown Matches.
Kelly, lead historian. I'm a jobber lover.
Are you?
Johnny and I drink.
And yes, me, Pop. We watch old school wrestling and love it.
Titans of Wrestling.
You know you want to hear.
Alright, so we're back now on the Kevin Kelly Show, and each week, each episode, we've had a different kind of guest. We've talked to some up-and-coming stars, we've talked to world champions, we've talked to legends, we've talked to trainers, but this is our first basketball announcer. And not only is our guest Sean Grandy the play-by-play announcer for the Boston Celtics, but he is a super uber-knowledgeable wrestling fan, and he's a better announcer than I am. So Sean, welcome to the show, and try not to leave me in the dust, okay?
Who on earth said that I was a better announcer than you?
I did.
You ask anyone that's listening to us now, they would probably, many of them would struggle to think of one memorable thing. I didn't have Steve Austin and Brian Pillman bullets flying by my head. Nobody remember. I don't. That's a memorable call. That's a memorable moment.
I don't know.
That's resonance.
You work about 4 feet away from the parquet floor, you know, with 20,000 banners hanging over your head. You know, and you call the basketball games for, you know, arguably the best organization in the history of the NBA. So I don't know. I'll throw some coins in that hat. How about that? But
sounds like a deal.
So we'll agree to disagree on that. But so obviously you know your stuff when it comes to basketball. But where did you become? Now, the reason that I knew you was not because I'm an NBA fan, but I met you through Dave Lagana. Because yeah. I found out you're a hell of a wrestling fan. How did you become a wrestling fan? Where did that journey begin?
And it's interesting that you've mentioned Dave only because he started doing a podcast a few years ago. And basically what he started doing was outing a lot of us who grew up in an era when it wasn't necessarily cool. And now you kind of step back and you realize a lot of us who are quote-unquote mainstream sportscasters and whatever, many of us are sort of out as wrestling fans. A lot of us because of Twitter and a lot of other reasons people know that we are, and we get asked these questions. You'd be amazed, Kevin, how many times I'll do an interview, you know, on a radio station that is theoretically about the Celtics or about the NBA or about sports or about a game I'm calling, and, you know, at the end, there's one of the hosts, and they're just sort of dying to ask a wrestling question. Like, and before we let you go, I got to ask you, and it's, you know, you become the Undertaker. Do you think that the streak, well, I mean, it's amazing how much it happens and how many people are out of the, you know, out of the woodwork now. And 15, 20 years ago, that didn't happen. But, you know, I'm fascinated by people's entry points. And it's the one thing, if I meet someone who's a fan or whatever, I'm always curious, especially now that I'm getting older and there are people that I encounter in my business that are younger than me and they're fans, I'm always interested in the entry point. And for me, mine was, and I, you know, I grew up in New York. I'm a New Yorker, as you were, you know, early on. And what hooked me in is the time when I was, I don't know, I'll say this is 8 years old or so. And I asked my dad, why is that Larry Zbyszko guy challenging that announcer to wrestle? Meaning, of course, Bruno Sammartino. And that was the angle that, you know, at 8 years old, that was what kind of brought me in. At the same time, you know, I'm a child of cable. And growing up in New York, all of a sudden, in addition to, you know, falling in love with the local product right away, you had Georgia coming in, you had Florida coming in on the Spanish stations on Monday nights, and, you know, there was this whole new world you were introduced to. And I had the four sports as a kid, and I knew every player on the Rangers and the Mets and the Jets and, you know, what have you. But all of a sudden, there was this brand new world. And I think that what happened in that era, I don't know if it's different now with kids, you become a fan at 8 years old, 9 years old, whatever it is, and then you sort of lose interest when you kind of figure out, hey, this isn't what I thought it was when I was a kid, and maybe there's something else going on here. And for me, when I was 13, 14, and I found out about the other world and how it really worked, whereas most kids lost interest, I became far more interested in how it really worked. Yeah.
My dad shot ringside photography back in the 50s. And shot a lot of boxing, but also did some wrestling too. So I'm up late, stomach ache, channel 9 midnight, and wrestling's on, and I flip, and I'm like, oh my God, what is this? And my dad steps in front of the TV and he says, before you even watch another second of it, let me explain to you how this all works. And he smartened me up to the whole business, at least what he knew of it, right? From a ringside photographer's perspective in the era of kayfabe. And it didn't deter me at all. I was like, cool. I just want to watch it, you know. And then, you know, go to Georgia and you watch Tommy Rich get attacked by Ole Anderson, you know, and my heart's beating out of my chest. So,
yeah, it was. That really was. It was like, you know, the Tommy Rich, the Larry Smith angle brought me in, and I became this, you know, insane Bob Backlund fan who at 8 or 9 years old would not. I couldn't even watch. There was a 2-year period I couldn't even go to the Garden because I would get too. I was so paranoid that he was going to lose that I couldn't even, you know, I couldn't deal with the stress until I got a little older. And then there was an angle that they did with Greg Valentine where they, it was actually a brilliant angle for 1981 in which they both wore the same color tights. And there was an airplane spin, ref bump, and Backlund falls on top of Valentine. The referee counts 3, but he's dizzy. And by the time he gets up, he raises Valentine's hand. And they give Valentine the belt. In any case, they theoretically, quote unquote, held up the title. They took the title off him, and that allowed me, the stress was then removed of losing the title, so I could go the next month and watch him, quote unquote, win it back. But that's how, you know, how nervous I would get. You'll like this story because if you watched Midnight Wrestling on Channel 9, and if there's anyone that remembers it, before that, well, off the top of your head, see if you remember what was on before that at 11:30 on Channel 9. You remember?
Gosh,
as soon
no.
as I say it, you're going to go, oh, yeah, I remember. It was harness racing.
Oh, right.
Meadowlands.
Yes.
Now, it was hosted by a guy named Spencer Ross, who later became a voice of the Celtics. He's done work in New York, and he's been a long time, you know, play-by-play announcer and host. And I met him when I was just coming up in my early 20s. That was the time he was the voice of the Celtics, and I worked at the radio station here. And I met him, and I had to, you know, eventually say, gosh, when I was a kid, I would see you on the sign-off. And he goes, don't even say it. He's like, you're that guy that comes on before the wrestling. He was known as that guy for years because he hosted the harness racing, which is on at 11:55. He'd sign off.
And to this day, I still will stop and watch if I see harness racing on TV occasionally. And again, that's one of those memories from my childhood. I didn't even make that connection until you just said it. That's amazing. Gosh,
we have all these
weird
memories of if you're that age, and we're fairly close in age, when the Braves game would go long and it would affect whether it was college football or something would mess up the wrestling that you wanted to see at 6 o'clock. It was always stress. Occasionally, the Rangers or Knicks would be on the West Coast and they would move the midnight show to 5 p.m. and you better be on the ball. You had to know that,
right?
Or else you're turning in 11 o'clock and there's a Ranger game or a Knicks game on the West Coast and you weren't paying attention and you missed the.
And
the 5 o'clock show.
And then when I was working for Vince in the WWE, one of the coolest things I ever did, I did a show, a Gary Albright tribute show after he passed away for Office Family, and it was at Ag Hall in Allentown. And I was like, how many hours of television did I see that was produced here in this crappy building? It's just all of those memories, all of those, and they carry us through our childhood and our life. Did you ever think of becoming a wrestling announcer? How did the journey take you towards regular sports?
I would say probably not really. There was never a place. I was the kid who, when I was, in addition to being just a crazy Knicks, Ranger, Mets, sports fan all the time, I was, doing my own wrestling newsletters when I was 15. When I was, 15, around that age, this is when I first found out what The Observer was. And right at the time, just before Wade Keller started with his, there was a guy named John Gallagher in Illinois, and he started a newsletter called The Wrestling Forum. And even though there was probably like 150 people that got it every month, this was like the number 2 or number 3 newsletter at the time because it was still a growing business. And I hooked up with him somehow through, I don't know how, anyway, before the internet, like people mailed each other letters. And,
yeah.
I mean, it boggles the mind. When you talk about, try to explain to your kids about mailing a letter and see how they look at you, turn your head sideways. Like, this is what we had to wait. When we ordered magazines, when we ordered back issues of Inside Wrestling, we had to wait 4 to 6 weeks
for
that package to show up. So
be the longest time ever.
It would be. What you paid for them has nothing to do with the amount of money I pay per month in storage for like every magazine from the 80s that was published is probably sitting in some storage thing,
Wow.
Like, I can't throw them out because they have value, not nearly the value that I pay every month in storage, but sometimes you emotionally just can't can't part. Well, you listen, know, I don't think ever, I ever really, ever really ever thought of getting, you know,
I was going to say, if you ever want to move them, Sean, you know, our buddy, Brutal Bob Evans, he's got the means, he's got the means and the methods.
That's right. That's right. He knows it well. Another guy who's taken to social media and has kind of adopted that. I would say no. I mean, I always wanted to be, I always wanted to be the play-by-play guy for the Mets or the Rangers or whatever. And this is always what I thought I would do. And even now, when, you know, every once in a while, Jim Ross will get asked on Twitter, "Hey, who from what sportscaster from a quote-unquote regular sport would be a great wrestling announcer?" And he always says me, which is a great honor since he's the best he's ever done it. But I never thought, you know, to whatever degree people think of me as a play-by-play announcer when it comes to basketball or hockey or football, I never thought I would be truly great. I never thought that skills would necessarily translate, because when you're the last person to whom this needs to be explained, it's a completely different, you know, it's a different animal. We're talking the week that JR did his boxing for Fox, and of course you can cross over. And I always thought that maybe in the olden days, you know, maybe a Jack Briscoe-Dory Funk match, you could, I might, my skill set might translate better to that.
Something that might be more equatable to traditional sport.
Yeah.
Your
company, and the way that product is would be different than, I think the moment that, I don't say the dream guy, because I never really thought of it as something I wanted to do, but I think the moment I always point to was that the business changed. You could point to a million, but mine is this innocuous one, when Road Warrior Hawk was on top of the Titantron. I think you were still working there at the time.
Yep.
And he fell off the, you know, quote unquote, fell off the Titantron. And, you know, he's, oh my God, what are we going to do? And this is the height of the Crash TV era. And 2 seconds later, Sable's music hits and she comes down the ramp, and Jerry Lawler said, "Well, can't grieve forever." Ah. And I think at that point I knew that we had moved on to something a little bit, a little bit beyond what I could, what I could comfortably call. But you know what's really interesting to me is now with the network, Gary Thorne is a good friend of mine. He's the voice of the Baltimore Orioles. He did Mets games years ago and the New Jersey Devils. He was the voice of the NHL. In the New York area, us Ranger fans are fondly reminiscing 20 years ago with the FEA hat trick and whatever in the Stanley Cup Finals. He was the voice of the NHL at that time and did all those games. And he is now the voice of that WrestleMania Rewind show on the network.
Very interesting.
So to me, the very long answer I just gave you to the question of, are there things that people like me could probably do now if there's a network and the business is so open, that there's documentaries to be done? And there's, to me, I'm fascinated by it because I think there's so much fertile ground that can be done, stuff that's never really been touched, that, you know, maybe people like me, who are sort of, you know, outsiders, maybe there is a role for people like us to contribute a little. But as far as actually doing it, it's an art form. I don't know if I could do it at that level.
You know, it's interesting because one thing, like my buddy Art O'Cal, who's now out in Western Canada working for the Weather Network, I think it's called out there, wants to be in the WWE and has all the talent in the world. And I said, you should probably go become an announcer at something else, because they will look more fondly upon your resume if it shows that you are more than just a wrestling announcer.
Yeah.
So it's a weird mindset. And I talked about the mindset of the WWE kind of in the open when I talked. I just, that top-down approach and the one-size-fits-all and the cookie-cutter style and everybody has to be the same way, it just doesn't work for me. The guys are artists. Let them display their art, and it's not going to kill the gallery if you remove one artist's piece and send it down the road and let him hang his art in another gallery. You just bring some new artists in and let them display their work. It'll be different, you know? There's nothing wrong with it. I think that everybody can be who they are, but sometimes having something else besides wrestling on your resume might not be a bad thing, Sean.
And I think there's no doubt about that, and everybody brings something different, and I think the danger of that, as far as the company, and again, as a total outsider to the company, and you could speak to it a million times better, there seemed to be a trend at some point, and I totally get it, within, you know, the upper echelon of it, to almost discount people that were wrestling fans and had a background when it came to creative, when it came to, as if everybody at the top there had grown up with it, so we want to try different ideas, and let's look to people who wrote sitcoms, and let's look to whatever, and sort of discount what I think is a really important element, which is you look at the people who have been truly successful in the business, and they are, like you and I, we can recall stories of things that happened when we were 10 years old, and TV shows, and that the harness racing came on before, because you have to have that true, you know, that true love of it, that sort of Pat Patterson live and breathe it.
Right.
You look at the people that have truly been successful, whether you're, you know, in creative or whether you're, you know, a performer in the ring, the truly great ones, with very few exceptions, were huge fans and lifelong fans and sort of students of it. And I think you can totally understand how it happened when it became a little more glamorous and people from the outside wanted in. You know, there's sort of that grass is always greener thing, and hey, this person's been on this TV show, and they've done this movie work, and let's bring them into our world. But I think sometimes it maybe came at the expense a little bit of the actual business itself, and I think that hurt it.
Right. Do we get, and I agree with you, Sean, in that regard, but do we kind of come across as the same type of fan who might scoff at the non-baseball player who moves into an executive role, who is just a stats geek, a sabermetrics guy, never played the game? They didn't, you know, do we come across in that same regard, like you have to be a player in order to be a baseball executive and you have to be a wrestler or have a wrestling background in order to be successful in wrestling? Are the two relatable?
I think it's a very interesting analogy, and I'd say no, only because what I'm talking about are the people that would be the baseball, like, you know, we're probably, you know, we're the baseball scouts, and the people that were the numbers people didn't mean they didn't love baseball. And again, maybe there's a difference between what is successful mathematically and what is successful creatively, and what translates and what doesn't. But it's interesting, and the problem is the older we get, we sit around and say, oh, things aren't the way they were
right,
when we were kids. And you know, you can't listen, we watched every Saturday night at midnight on the shows they taped 3 weeks earlier at Ag Hall. And we're glued to it, but you couldn't put that product on today. I laugh. One of my favorite things is this, even at 12, like whenever the earliest I possibly could have been smartened up to anything, I still laugh at the idea, the notion in our lifetime that a title change didn't count until it aired on TV. Like that boggles my mind that this is so, you know, that's the way it was done back then, but you just sort of accepted it.
Right. And it's crazy. I think when one thing that we always say to the guys is, back then it looked like hell and everybody believed it, and now it's so real and no one believes it. It's just scary.
Yeah.
It's scary. What if you were like this Saturday? Because I was saying before, this Saturday I'm going to Larry Sharp's Monster Factory and I'm doing a promo camp. If you were in front
Larry
of
Larry Sharp, heavily featured at midnight on Channel 9.
I'm going to go mark
driver.
Out.
I
gotta get there like an hour early just to
walk
around. Paulsboro,
New Jersey.
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly where I'm going. And I hope Larry doesn't come around as much as he used to back in the day when he was very hands-on training guys. But there's a ton of memorabilia on the wall. So I'm going to go early and look at everything and then start the camp. But if you were in front of a group of young trainees, up-and-coming wrestlers, guys that are looking for guidance, What advice would you give them? What would you say to them?
I would tell them to find somebody far more qualified than myself. But I would tell them as a fan, and I would say this would trend. The one thing I would say to anybody, the people that come to me, and obviously in my field, I hear from young aspiring play-by-play guys all the time. And I think this one piece of advice would hold true in whatever it is you do. You have to be yourself. You cannot do it the way other people have done it and the way other people do it now. There is an element, and here's something that there are many wrestling lessons that I have sort of adopted and that work, you know, in my field and I think in any field when it comes to the first being on the air. If you're on the air in any capacity, it is your personality with the dial turned up. And you have to remember that people, you know, when I'm on the air, I'm calling a game and it's journalism, but I'm performing as well. And you're not like that. You don't go to the grocery, you're not going to Whole Foods the next day and calling with the same intensity, you know, what's in the aisle and what you need on your shopping list. It's different. So, but it is you on the air, and you can't be somebody else. You have to do it the way you would do it. It doesn't mean you're not going to play different characters and play different roles, but you have to find some, you know, some element of truth. There was the hero is the villain of his own story, but the villain is the hero of his own story.
Right, right.
There's a great like theater quote, and that's something that you know you can sort of you adopt in your you know in your role. And I don't know. I think there are many. There's a frightening amount of lessons to be learned. Things that I picked up just watching wrestling and reading about it and listening to what Guy said that translate to almost any field.
It's funny how and I look at what you do, and I always try to find parallels between wrestling and other walks of life. And I look at the way that basketball and the NBA in particular has evolved from the team game to really being that star driven. You know, now it's about the personality and it's about the stardom and, you know, LeBron. And we're in an era now that is reminiscent of, you know, kind of the hottest times of wrestling, I think, because you have big stars who are really stepping up and coming to the forefront. Where do you think the NBA is now in kind of in if you put at its zenith? The hottest time when Rock and Austin were on top was when we had Magic and Bird, etc. Where are we now in this era here in 2014?
Well, that's a fascinating analogy, and here's why. Because in both cases, you have success from a marketing standpoint and from a television standpoint, drawing eyeballs to your product, filling arenas, and having people, you know, people on the street that aren't necessarily into it, watching the NBA finals and becoming engrossed in the product because of the way you have marketed the individuals. And yet the teams that are successful are the ones that play together. Individual players don't win championships in the NBA. LeBron, on his way to becoming the best to ever play, is the ultimate teammate. And he was when he was 18. He came in and was getting other guys. Well, I've never seen an 18-year-old walk into the NBA in what is, in many ways, a me league for younger players and be that team player. The WWE went berserk in the late 90s. Obviously, Austin was on top and Rock was on top, but you had an unbelievable, and I, you know, for me to say this to you seems silly since you were there, but it was a team effort. It was the Monday Night Wars, but it was everybody pulling together to, you know, create that team atmosphere. If you don't have Mick Foley in that third or fourth spot, or however you would, you know, describe the hierarchy, making the other guys better and pushing everybody and, you know, creative and everybody working so hard from top to bottom, you wouldn't have turned around the way that it did. It was a team effort. We remember Austin 15 years later because he was the top guy, but that was the ultimate example of a team effort, whereas across the street, everything kind of fell apart from a team standpoint, and you there at WCW, you have rewarded guys with individual guaranteed contracts, and that undermined, you know, the entire team effort of what you wanted to accomplish.
The guaranteed contract to me is one of the things that I always like to in the NBA. To me, the guaranteed money has hurt my appreciation of the game, because once they sign these guys, these big money deals, bench role players who have no, you know, and it now it saddles the team and they're stuck in this cap hell, and there's ways of getting out of it. But boy, oh boy, is there anything that you would change about the NBA in terms of like salary structure or anything like that? If Sean Grandy came in and replaced Adam Silver, waved the magic wand, what are some of the things that you're going to do to change the league?
I think there are some things you just can't look back. I wonder if we are going to look back 20 years from now at the NFL and be amazed at how long the league went really without guaranteed contracts. And that's why the NFL has the competitive balance that it does, is because, and the short careers, because they've been able to, the league is so much stronger than the players union, they haven't been able to get the guaranteed contracts. I think that you'd want ideally to have more salary flexibility, but you know, the NBA system that was put in place has for the most part worked. If you say, okay, it's made trades hard, you can't call sports talk shows and go, hey, why don't we trade this guy for that guy and that guy, and the host says you can't because of the salary cap, which becomes a boring discussion. So you'd want to make player movement, on the one hand, you want to make it easier, like it is, but in the NHL you've had a hard cap, and what that has led to, what the NBA system has was created to promote was players staying with their teams because there was incentive. You weren't penalized for signing your player for whatever you could sign him for. And it was the intention was to make it preferable for a player to stay with the team. That doesn't always work. And we're going to see, you know, guys like Kevin Love are always going to force their way to a, you know, a better market and a bigger market and a better team. And it's going to happen. But you've had in the NHL, it's become so fractured, it's very rare that players stay with teams. And you're getting a lot of one-year contracts where players are going to different teams. And, you know, when we reminisce about the sports of our youth, guys were with teams for 7, 8, 9, 10 years. You know, you grew up with players. So I think, you know, player movement, you can see what hard caps and soft caps and the difference between the NFL and the NHL and the NBA is. I think, you know, the NBA game is pretty strong right now. There's the rule about the draft age to me is really interesting because it's very unconstitutional to me.
Right.
Right now they want to raise the draft age. I interviewed David Stern on several occasions, and David Stern is, you know, as brilliant a mind as you're ever going to come across. But I imagine there are more than a few parallels between David Stern and the guy that you used to work for.
Yeah.
That runs WWE. And that you got to be careful. Now, and the only time in all the interviews I ever, like, pushed him on a follow-up and got the, you know, the death stare was on the draft age and how, isn't it unconstitutional, and how can we possibly justify, you know, setting it? But that's a rule that has been great for the NBA because guys don't come in anymore from a Mississippi high school. Now they're coming from North Carolina State, and it's hurt the college game.
Right.
Because the college game now is all this one and done, and player, you know, guys are transferring constantly back and forth. But it's been great for the NBA because they get the free marketing out of it. So things that are good for one league can be, you know, good for the pros, can be bad for college. Things that work for one league might not work for another.
How tough is it for you to, because Celtics struggled this year and they're rebuilding. How tough is it to go and call the games, you know, with not much buzz in the arena?
I think for a lot of us, and it turned out to be a really interesting year on a couple of levels. You know, we certainly all knew it was coming. I think that they say reentry is the most difficult part of the mission. And I think there was an element when we all came back after the last 6 years we've had. The NBA is very much like Premier League soccer. There's the actual NBA and there's the relegation pool. You know, there's the teams that you are on TNT and ESPN every week and the teams that aren't. And when you've been in that upper other pool for 6 years and you've had deep playoff runs and you've won a championship and you're in game seven of the finals, to go back into that other group was a little bit difficult at first. But I think the fans in certain markets, and particularly in Boston, they are so knowledgeable. They knew what this was about. They supported a young team. The biggest problem we have, and you're asking me if there's one thing I would change about the NBA, and certainly it was reinforced by going through the season. The hard part wasn't calling the games or telling the story, because if you're a play-by-play announcer in any sport, there's always a story to tell. It doesn't matter if it's, you know, if you're 20 and 60, there's something happening in that game tonight. There are many things that are happening that are compelling, and your job is to find it. The opening match on the card has something compelling in it. There's a story that's being told in front of you. So there's always something there. The hardest part was the one thing I would change about the NBA, which is the draft lottery system. And you simply cannot reward teams for losing. And it's especially in this day and age, because in 2007, the last time the Celtics were in a lottery, they had a mid-level team at the start of the year, and then guys started dropping left and right, and Paul Pierce got hurt, and it became clear midway through the season you were better off losing. They had a long losing streak, and towards the end of the year, you'd hear from the tank brigade that wanted you to lose games. This year, because it was clear what the Celtics had to do, the first time the Celtics won a couple of games in November, you have a very vocal minority, and now Twitter's a big part of this, you know, panicking every time they won a game.
Matt Taven and Eddie Edwards were part of that vocal minority, freaking out.
Tell me about it.
I had to
block them half the time.
We need to lose so we can get Wiggins.
and this is the problem in the big picture. You step back and say, listen, I'm not, people would ask me a million times, how can you be happy when they want first, as if people wanted me to say, Jeff Green in the corner for three. God damn it, the Celtics win. This is off. You know, it's, please. Number one, so it makes the job difficult, because then the talk show guys the next day are sort of, you know, taking the other side as if they wanted me to do that. And Cedric Maxwell is my partner, and we're just sort of laughing at them that you're kind of missing the point. And anyone that thinks that has never played the game, has never traveled with a team, has never been, you know, you got to win some games. You have to have reward for all the hard work that goes into it. And there are no real businesses, you know, it's hard to find a parallel to this where you are rewarded for losing. But, you know, I think for the most part, the fans were very supportive, and it happened the way it was, you know, it was supposed to happen. But the idea of, you know, tanking games and going through a miserable season and a fraudulent season, and some teams in the NBA did, for a 10% chance to get someone who's got a 10% chance to be a star is ridiculous. And there's no right. better example in 2007 when the teams that tanked, you know, the idea was to get Greg Oden. Anyone that tells you they weren't going to take Greg Oden first is lying. And Greg Oden obviously never, you know, barely played a game.
Yeah, look at
NBA. So there's just
how his career panned out. It's amazing.
Yeah.
When you think about that. Okay, so you're a Ranger fan just like me. You're a Mets fan just like me.
I was. That's where I was. You know, my team, I learned, Kevin, how to do this last season by growing up, you know, in the late 70s, early 80s with the Mets.
Oh,
you know,
my God.
Teams
with Lindsey Nelson and Ralph Kiner and Bob Murphy.
And Bob Murphy as a three. They were there for the first 17, 18 years. I have some memory of that. And then Murph, you know, I switched to radio, and that's kind of where I started as a young guy when it became apparent I wasn't going to play second base for the Mets and that my best chance was going to be, you know, as a broadcaster, just listening
well,
to Bob Murphy.
Listen, Felix Mion was not going to hand the glove to you, you know, apparently. Wayne Garrett at third and Buddy Harrelson at short. They were not going
Felix
to.
Felix Mion is a very early memory for me, but again, I think we have that slight little age difference. This will strike home. That was one of that. Before I was a wrestling fan, probably my first wrestling memory was Ed Ott body slamming Felix Mion.
And that's
like,
right.
Putting him out for the year. So like
Bastard.
Breaking up a double play or something. I remember that, reading about that at seven. He became like the most hated, you know, baseball player.
Well, the biggest heel for the Mets was Pete Rose, because I was just a little guy in 73 with fighting Buddy Harrelson, that bastard.
Right.
And we went to a game. I think I was like now, what, 7, 8 years old, a couple of years later. And Rose was playing left field for the Cincinnati Reds. We made sure we got seats in left field so that we could boo Pete Rose. So, all right. So we got so we're Mets fans. We're Ranger fans. Apparently, are you nervous? Are you worried? Or after last night, is everything okay?
You know, I have to tell you, it's fun to root again. I tell people this is it's a dream job I've been lucky enough to have, and you know, I try to do it well, and I make it my life's work because I remember the things that announcers said when I was a kid, and you're trying to enhance that experience, and that's the most rewarding thing when you realize, you know, every night when I go to work, I try to find a kid in the arena just to make eye contact with some 10-year-old, knowing that that was me and that I'm doing what I wanted to do. It's always a good, you know, a good sort of reminder. But as the downside of it, of living behind the velvet robe and living behind the curtain, is it's hard to be a fan.
Yeah,
it's hard to, you lose that. And when the Rangers won the Stanley Cup, and obviously, I was sort of just out of college, and I always think back of that as sort of like my last true night as a fan. But, you know, when you get older, and then I've got my 2.5-year-old son is like yelling for the Rangers the other night. So that helps, you know, sort of bring you back into it. And it's fun, you know, it's fun again to watch and to think if they can get one more win, they can be back in the finals for the first time. It's good for the league to have Chicago and Montreal and New York and teams like that playing. And obviously, I've been here in Boston the last couple of years where the Bruins went through a very long drought, and now they're a cup contender every year.
Yeah, and our buddy Todd Sinclair, the best referee in the business today, is a huge Bruins fan. Watches games on he basically tapes everything and then mass watches them. So we have to not tell him the scores of games, and we can't talk to him about it. I'm like, finally, you know, a week after the bees had been eliminated, I said, Todd, are you all caught up now? Can we talk hockey? He goes, yeah. I go, okay. How did you think about?
That's fascinating, because that, to me, that's as old school as there is. That's sort of a lost art. You can't do it. Avoiding the score.
Oh yeah.
That's a lot. That was a big part of certainly our childhood and college years. But that to me is a completely lost art. I tried years ago. I had a New Year's resolution that I was going to try to become a better person. I was going to read Time and Newsweek every week. That was my New Year's resolution. And, you know, it takes forever if you're going to try to read every article in those magazines, and the season's going on, and you're falling way behind, and pretty soon, you know, you get on, people are like, oh, my God, you see that tsunami? I'm like, I'm not up to that yet. Don't tell, you know, Don't tell me what's going on. But that's that to me in the era of Twitter and cable, and that's why sports TV rights are going through the roof, because it's something, an experience you have to have live now.
Right, exactly. Hey, we got just a minute left. I want to thank you, Sean, for being with us. Who's going to win the NBA Finals? We got we're down to the Final Four. The Pacers, Heat look like they're going to advance. 2-2 in the West as we speak with San Antonio now with Ibaka back. Who knows, Serge Ibaka? He could be the difference maker in this whole thing. Who's eventually going to get crowned the champion?
Yeah, I think Miami wins. I think they're the best team. I don't know how much longer the run goes, because, you know, it'll be interesting to see. Everyone's talking about, is LeBron going to leave? I think he's going to stay. And
I think
there'll be a new cast that will follow him there, and there'll be sort of a new generation of this, you know, Miami Heat, because Wade, forget his age, his knees are just, you know, much older than he is at this point. But I think, to me, LeBron is so head and shoulders above everybody else, that supporting cast with Ray Allen hitting threes, and they're defending well enough, which they don't always do during the regular season. It's hard for me to see. I think San Antonio gave them their best shot last year. And, you know, obviously could have had them if it wasn't for that Ray three. But I don't have anything terribly original to say other than Miami winning again.
Well, we'll be interested to see what happens with that. And okay, real quick, I know that you could probably spend a lot of time debating this. On your wrestling Mount Rushmore, give me some names. Give me some figures that we're going to see on the Sean Grandy Mount Rushmore.
I think there became a moment. You know, Flair was always number one. And I think there was a moment in the last few years during Shawn Michaels' run in 2009, 2010, and the parallels, I've had this conversation with Bill Simmons, a very good friend of mine, and we've talked about this for years. The parallel between Jordan and Michaels is really remarkable when you think about a guy who was extraordinarily talented as a younger, but not necessarily a great teammate, but won and was very successful, then went away for a couple of years and came back even better than he was after that. So to me, I put Michaels probably ahead of Flair, and I don't see how you can't leave Austin off there. You know, Hogan is I have an interesting take on Hogan as a child of the Bob Backlund era. I was very resentful as a 12-year-old and a 13-year-old when Hulk Hogan came in and took that spot, and everybody loved him. And I, you know, there was my guy, you know, kind of cast aside. But, you know, when you're talking about just the Rushmore of the business, those are probably the four, but it's a fascinating conversation that could go on and on. As we're talking, and I'm not sure exactly when you're going to put this up, but I grabbed something I'm going to take a picture of and tweet it tonight, because the date, I looked at the date today as we're talking, which is May 29th, and it stuck in my head for some reason. And you're a New Yorker, I was a New Yorker, so it was all WWE all the time. 30 years ago tonight, and I just found the program deep in my closet. 30 years ago tonight, my dad drove me to the Meadowlands, because the NWA was coming for the first time
Ooh.
In New York. And I got to see a Ric Flair, Rick Steamboat match that ended the show. We had never seen anything like that. You grew up in New York in the Bruno Sammartino, Bob Backlund era. There were some great Backlund matches, but it wasn't, you know, it wasn't Flair Steamboat.
Right.
And I actually found I found the program. I remember going, you know, everybody was on the show. It was an NWA show in New York. It was just, it boggled the mind to see it. And this is, who knew, you know, we were at the very early weeks, really, of what would be the war of 84 and everything that happened afterwards. But it was
that was my favorite era, my favorite time in the business. We got to do this again, Sean. We got to continue this conversation. And if we can make the schedule work, I know you're very, very busy. Anytime you want, we'll have you on Ring of Honor. Whether it's for a show, for a match, whatever, we're doing pay-per-view now. If we're up in your area, we can make it happen very easily. I'd love to have you on. It would be a blast to have you call Ring of Honor matches with us.
Kevin, a lot of people appreciate your work a lot more than I think you realize. And I really appreciated the time. It was a lot of fun.
Yeah, that'd be awesome. All right, well, thank you very much, Sean. And enjoy the rest of the summer, and we'll talk to you soon.
You got it, man.
We continue here on the Kevin Kelly Show here on the Place to Be Nation and PlaceToBeNation.com. I want to thank Sean Grandy, who we could have talked to for hours, days. maybe even weeks. This could have been an episodic thing. It could have lasted an entire... We could have talked to him until Celtics tip-off for the first preseason game, just to hear how he became a fan and what he was like as a kid. Very relatable. JR, could you, is there anything in your fandom... You're younger, so a different era that you grew up in, a little different than Sean and I. Is there anything like that relatable to you as far as moments where your heart was in your throat and you couldn't go to school, you couldn't go to shows because you were afraid of Bob Backlund losing?
That was awesome. That was my favorite story in 10 episodes of the Kevin Kelly Show. Yeah, the montage shortly after WrestleMania 6 when Earthquake crushed Hulk Hogan. And they played this like sappy montage of him getting smacked, and they interspersed with like happy music and him visiting like USO tours, and then it would cut to this like ominous music and Earthquake killing him. And I was like in tears watching that. I was 9. I'd really just gotten into wrestling probably that fall before, and so that was like a big time holy shit for me. Other time was just marking out at a live show. Royal Rumble 94 we went to, and me and my friend Josh had just gotten him into wrestling the fall before. And we went to the Rumble and had an awesome time. That April, we went to the WrestleMania Revenge Tour. And it's funny because this kind of ties together Grandy talking about title changes that happened and weren't acknowledged until they aired. So Diesel defeated Razor Ramon at a house show the night before our show, but it hadn't aired on Superstar. So we didn't know, but he came out as Intercontinental Champion, and we were marking out like crazy because we were huge Diesel and Shawn Michaels fans. So we were like screaming and cheering, going nuts. So those are my two early day JR fandom moments.
It's funny because there were times like where I had not, and I think I told the story on this show. I may have told it on you guys' show, but Joe LeDuc scared the hell out of me as a kid, and when he turned and attacked Jimmy Garvin on Florida TV, like I had nightmares about that because I loved Joe LeDuc. He was one of my favorites, and now he was a bad guy, and I just and I remember seeing him, like I went to a Monday night show at West Palm Beach Auditorium probably a month later, and he was probably in like the third or fourth match, and I saw him and just, he just scared me to death. It was all I could do to just not watch that match. But Sean is he's kind of that every fan, but if you think about what he gets to do for a job, mm-hmm. there's... You know, and he's like, oh, I'm not that good, you know, Kevin. I'm like, are you ribbing me, brother? You called games for the Celtics.
And he's really well respected. I've never heard anyone say anything coarse about him as an announcer. He makes his rounds on radio shows and always gets good reviews from everyone.
Yeah, he's not a hack like the John Sterling of your Yankees.
Leave John Sterling alone.
Oh, my God. He's such a hack.
Yeah, he's at least entertaining. You ever listen to like an Oakland A's radio broadcast? You want to be asleep two outs into the game. At least he makes you laugh.
and who's another one who's kind of a Charlie Steiner? I don't know.
Well, you got some of the football guys too that are just a mess out there on the national.
Yeah, broadcast. I'm trying to. Who
you know? I guess Ian Eagle. You an Ian Eagle fan?
Love Ian Eagle.
He's very good.
And Kenny Albert has really grown on me. Especially doing the NHL games this year. Mm-hmm. I mean, he does hockey all year round and has done it for many, many years. But I think he's kind of really stood out to me this year as like being, wow, he's freaking great.
Yep.
I love Ian Eagle. Who else do I really like a lot?
He's still an out. Like I like Al Michaels and Collinsworth. I think they're my favorite NFL team.
Yeah, I think Al is great. Collinsworth,
yeah.
I like John Gruden.
Yeah, well, see, Gruden's like Sterling to me. I mean, he knows the stuff more, but he's more of a character.
I might be in the minority on that one. I could see where people might not like John Gruden, but I just like him. Who else do I like? Oh, there's a lot of guys I like. There's more that I like than I don't like. It was great having Granny on, and we could talk about the review of the interview for a long time. But that was a great get. So excellent job, JR. In having Sean Grandy as a part of the Kevin Kelly Show.
Hopefully he'll be back here on other PTBN shows. We're going to work on getting him back.
Yeah, he needs to be here because, I mean, who's our ESPN alum? He retweeted.
The Bauer, Michael Bauer.
That's right. The Bauer Show is on.
Mm-hmm.
And he retweeted. I just went blank for a second. I apologize. He retweeted my stuff for this. And So yeah, there's a lot of great places for, you know, a guy like Sean Grandy who's got time to kill apparently with not doing Red Sox games this year.
That's right. Yeah, he's great guy, great wrestling fan. Anytime you get a guy like that that knows pretty much anything and everything about wrestling from, you know, like 1979-ish on.
Yeah.
A-OK by the PTBN playbook.
He works for us here. All right. Well, you know, enough about Sean.
Yeah.
But there's other stuff happening in the world. And, you know, no spoiler alerts on this. We're talking about trending stories. So let's get to the first trending story this week, JR.
I don't know if you can hear that. It's a little soft, that theme.
I can.
It's a Murder, She Wrote theme because former New England Patriots star Aaron Hernandez ambushed and killed two Cape Verdean immigrants on a South End street in 2012 because, Kevin Kelly, one of them had bumped him while dancing at a Boston nightclub.
Well, first of all, allegedly.
it's lining up not quite positively for Mr.
Yeah,
Hernandez.
I know.
In the months leading up to the shooting, Hernandez had become angry because people had been testing, trying, or otherwise disrespecting him at frequented nightclubs in the area. Assistant District Attorney Patrick Hagen said at Hernandez's arraignment earlier today. On the night of Sunday, July 15, 2012, the Cure nightclub, Daniel Abreu accidentally bumped into Hernandez, who was standing at the edge of the dance floor, causing him to spill his drink. Hernandez began to fume. No verbal argument broke out, but he told a friend that he's being targeted and disrespected and that Abreu is trying him. They waited outside for him and then ended up firing a .38 caliber pistol into his car, killing Abreu and Safrio Furtado, one of his friends. And
I love a nice Safrio Furtado on a Sunday morning brunch. It's delicious. And these are allegations. These is alleged. All could be not true.
Well, he pled not guilty.
You see?
No bail, though.
Why do people got a mess? You know what I mean? Brother just signs a $40 million contract, and why can't a brother get a little elbow room?
Just a little bit of breathing room, that's all?
He just needs a little elbow room. You know, he's out there trying to dance. He's probably got a little Elaine Bennis in him. It's not may not be a pretty dance. It might be a little bit of a flailer, but he's out there with his drink in hand. He's getting his groove on, and dudes from Cape Verde are jacking him up, man.
Shaking his groove thing.
Man, it's just
You think he was dancing to some disco?
He could dance to whatever he wants. I think he was hearing his own tune. Let me ask you a question about this. How does a guy like this get all this paranoid?
Do the jitterbug. I would say drugs.
You think it's drugs? You think it's concussions?
Oh, concussions, definitely. That's a big part of it. I think part of it, too, is growing up in that gang mentality and that lifestyle and everything else, you know?
How does the NFL, college football, he went to the University of Florida, so they don't even care. But how do you get drafted by the NFL with all the background checks that they do and the investigations that they do? And how does a guy who has all these gang ties slip through the cracks to where, you know, they basically brought in a person who has been now accused of double homicide, and there is more, you know, there could be more on his rap sheet than we know about. How does that happen?
I don't know. I mean, I want to make Patriot jokes here because I can't stand them, but I mean, did he have a bad rap? Yeah, that's probably why he fell. But I think they did their due diligence. They thought maybe he could, they could keep him kind of the straight and narrow. I think the worst thing to happen to him, actually, though, is being drafted. Because wasn't he from the area? Wasn't he from up around here? I think he is. So
right, he's a Connecticut guy.
Yeah, so, you know, I think that didn't help. They kind of brought him right back to the area where all his troubles growing up were. You know, then issues with his uncle and everything else with his family, if I'm remembering correctly now. It's been about a year since the story first broke. So I think that probably didn't help him. You know, maybe if he had gone out to Seattle or Arizona, could things have gone a little bit differently for him? I don't know. I mean, he's probably still had it in him, but maybe not being around the trouble, not being in the area where he grew up and had a lot of bad influences in his life, maybe would have went a little bit differently.
It might have been.
Probably not.
I wondered why, because, again, I'm a Florida State guy, and I always wondered why a Connecticut product would come to the University of Florida. And maybe that was a good thing for him to get away. But who knows? He might have. There were stories and rumors floating around that he was involved in some bad stuff when he was at UF, and Urban Meyer swept it under the rug. So who knows? You know, I don't know. I feel bad for athletes that are in these types of positions because there's always people that are
have their hooks into him for money. And
this guy seems beyond that, though. I mean, this is just a, I mean, you can argue he's a serial killer at this point. I mean, he's killed multiple people in cold blood for no reason other than to get bumped. I mean, can you just picture him? He's out on the dance floor.
Yeah.
Doing a little line dancing with his collar popped on his Hawaiian shirt. He's just having a little Mai Tai. He's dancing with the ladies.
And then what happens?
And this jerk from Cape Verde bumps into him, doesn't apologize. And, you know, you got to take care of business.
My Mai Tai just spilled all over my Hawaiian shirt while I'm line dancing here to September by Earth, Wind, and Fire.
All right.
Jerks.
Anything else left to say about Mr. Hernandez?
No. Hercules. Give him the chair.
Who's the better Hernandez, Aaron or Hercules?
Oh, are you kidding me? Big Herc.
Yeah.
Herc is the man.
I'll tell you, I just watched his match with Ricky Steamboat from WrestleMania 2. A very good match. A little forgotten little match. Just, I think it was like about 8 or 9 minutes, but they Herc hung right with him.
You know, there is a greater appreciation for him over the last few years. You're not the first person I've heard that has complimented that match and has said, you know, Hercules Hernandez was better than I thought. Another guy who I hated that they changed his name. Why couldn't he be Hercules Hernandez? No, he's Hercules.
That's Hercules. He carries a chain. He's a god.
Idiot.
I remember after he died, we went to a live show, and me and Mark Claire, another writer for the show, for the site, part-time writer, made a sign, RIP Hercules, with a big kind of chain graphic all through it, and we got the king to acknowledge it and give us a little kind of fist pump and shook his head, sadly, when we called him over and pointed out our sign. So
there was a teenage girl standing next to you. That's why you got the acknowledgement.
Probably. All right. You ready for the next story?
Hey, you got a sister? All right. What's the next story as we're doing trending stories here on the Kevin Kelly Show? It's my favorite part. Here
by
we
the
go.
Way,
trending
it took everything in my fiber, my being, not to make that joke last week when DDP was talking about the king's girlfriend and the yoga thing. All right, number two. Rap is coming to Cupertino in a big way, Kevin Kelly.
What?
After weeks of rumor, Apple has finally announced it has acquired headphone maker Beats Electronic for $3 billion, including $2.6 billion cash up front and approximately $400 million in stock that will vest over time. And, my favorite part, as part of the deal, Beats co-founders Dr. Dre and Jimmy Iovine will join Apple in undisclosed roles. What is Dr. Dre going to do working at Apple? Is he going to develop apps? I mean, like, is he going to work at the Apple, the Guru Bar? Could you imagine that? You walk into the Apple store to fix your MacBook and Dr. Dre's just working at the counter?
I love it. And the when you said Cupertino, I forgot that's where Apple is, because you know who is a native of Cupertino, California?
I do not.
In wrestling, The Godfather.
Is he really?
He's from Cupertino. He played high school sports out there and was a high school legend, scoring, I think he scored like 60 points in a basketball game. He set track and field records. He did all kinds of great things. But now I think Dr. Dre has supplanted him as perhaps the most famous guy in Cupertino.
Is he the most successful? I guess he is now, right? I mean, is it tied with Jay-Z, I guess?
See,
this guy's a billionaire now.
Let's look at fortune. Okay, so I think that with this deal, $3 billion, he and Jimmy will split it halfway. So $1.5 million. All right. $1.5 billion. I think
he's
out
for a job with Apple.
And a job. Yes. Nice. He's got that going for him. I don't know. I think he's more successful than Jay-Z. But I always look at like Rev Run, who continues year after year after year to, I'm sure, collect. I don't know who's made more money over their career. It could be interesting just because there's that franchise of Run DMC. And I think,
but it's taking him longer, right? Or you're saying he's done
absolutely. We're talking since 1984 now.
Right. Whereas, took him longer, whereas Dre's done this since, you know, whatever.
Dre did it since 90, whatever.
Yeah.
And then Jay-Z in an even shorter time span.
Right.
But yeah, I think those are probably your top three earners. I don't know. I could be completely wrong. Eminem, Snoop Dogg could have out-earned all of them for all I know.
Snoop's a weird one because he's never really branched out too far other than the rap stuff. You know, he had great in the rap stuff, but Eminem's a wild card as well. He's been very successful too.
Well, it's something to think about, but now, you know, of course Beats, the headphones, which I saw are sold for like $400 and cost $14 to make. I read that in the story. Isn't that amazing?
Cost on those things is microscopic. So, hey, good for Jimmy Iovine.
And, he said he always imagined Beats would be with Apple. That was the goal. I'm sure that was there.
Yeah, sure that's exactly what he said. Yeah, everybody that develops an app is like, and one day we'll be part of Apple.
I'm going to be very upset if Dre is not fixing my Mac next time I have to go into the Guru Bar. I just picture holding the clipboard. Oh, did you make an appointment? Okay, go stand over there. Andre will be right with you.
get to story number three, because I don't know what number three is, but I got something I want to piggyback off of that last story. Go ahead. Let's go with trending story number three, please.
Tell me that's not an SNL skit waiting to happen. A rap Apple store.
Oh, my gosh.
All the rappers working in there? That'd be great. Hey, Kevin, if you got to have a party crasher, then by gum, it should be Bill Murray. And technically, the actor, comedian, all-around interesting guy, wasn't exactly invading a Charleston, South Carolina bachelor party over Memorial Day weekend. He was kind of a last-minute invitee. As Deadspin's Concourse blog reported, one of the readers was on hand for a surprise visit. At one point during dinner at a steakhouse, one guy goes to the bathroom downstairs and sees Bill Murray sitting with some people with a fishing vest on. We walked to the waiter to see if we could send him some drinks, but Bill declined. One of my buddies went down and asked if he'd come up to say a few words for the groom-to-be. And Bill said no, thank you. His buddy came up all dejected and said, it's not going to happen, guys. But 2 minutes later, Bill Murray walks into the room and gives a speech.
That is cool.
Is there a cooler celebrity than Bill Murray?
No, he's absolutely the coolest. Absolutely the coolest. And again, just having that as your... Now, that's for the bachelor party, right?
Yeah, it was the bachelor party, yes.
Okay, so now, how's the wedding going to top that?
Oh, it's not. You might as well just not get married. So here's the advice. He said, if you know how they say funerals are for the dead, not for the living? Well, bachelor parties are not for the groom. They're for the unmarried.
Oh, there you go. So the groom-to-be should be buying all the drinks and not the other way around.
It's for the other guys to party. And he also said, if you have someone that you think is the one, take that person and travel around the world. Buy a plane ticket for the two of you to travel around the world and go to places that are hard to go to and hard to get out of. And when you land back at JFK, if you're still in love, then you get married.
So. Yeah, I got news for you, Bill. most folks can't afford that. So
he's trying, Kevin.
We'll sit on the couch and we'll try to watch a movie together and make it through that if we can survive 2 hours.
If you could do a podcast with Scott Criscolo for 310 episodes, you can get married to anyone.
You can get married to anyone. Yes, indeed.
Anybody.
You know, I wasn't sure if this was going to be one of the
top
stories.
Well, I got one more if you want it.
Oh, my gosh. Well, listen, the Bill Murray story was great. Dr. Dre and Beats, now part of the Apple family, also great. But what could be even better than this? How about trending story number four?
Donald Sterling back in the news, appeared to authorize his wife, Rochelle, to negotiate a sale of the Los Angeles Clippers in a letter he sent to the NBA through one of his longtime lawyers Thursday. The letter, a copy of which was obtained Wednesday by the New York Times, stands in stark contrast to a 32-page document Sterling's legal team sent Tuesday night saying he was going to fight the league. So a lot of conflict going on right now, Kevin. A little bit of a lover's quarrel. Him and V. Stiviano, now he's bitching, saying it was illegally recorded. He's going to fight to the bloody end. He's going to start telling secrets. Going to start telling tales out of school, dropping the dime. Did you see what he said about Kobe Bryant?
What?
Kobe Bryant apparently was picked up on camera a couple years ago calling a referee a fucking F-word. And I quoted myself. That was not me
saying
the
F-bomb. Wait a minute. You said an effing F-word? Or
effing F-word. An effing F-word.
Okay. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I know. So, because we can say one. I don't want to say the other. So.
Yeah, sure.
So he was caught on tape doing that. He only got fined, I think it was like $250,000 or something like that for that, getting caught on tape. But he's saying that's a lot worse than someone who, you know, secretly recorded me in my own home. And Kobe Bryant's still playing, and he didn't get a big fine. You're fining me $2.5 million. You're making me sell my team. So Donald Sterling, all kinds of pissed off. Right back in the news. Have your thoughts changed any on this, or are you still kind of in the same place we were a few weeks ago?
No, still the same place, but I'm impressed the fact, and I'm disappointed that it was Sterling and his legal team. I thought maybe he actually wrote those long letters. Because, yes. Like, that would be, he's got a lot of time on his hands now, right? And, you know, are they typewritten?
Typewriter, for sure.
Typewriter? How's his penmanship? I know Steve Corino has fantastic penmanship.
Really?
He has the best handwriting. Have him write you a letter sometime.
I'm going to ask him to write me a letter. I want to get the pen pal thing back up and going.
You know, I think, Donald Sterling as a pen pal. Aaron Hernandez is going to be looking for a pen pal.
There you go.
In jail.
My girlfriend bought me this word processor, but I'm still going to use my typewriter.
Leave those word. Don't bring the word processors to the games with you. Anything. I don't care.
Oh, I can't stand the word processors. If I see them courtside, I can't take it.
You pose on your Instagram with your word processors.
Try to rub all that technology in my face.
We've now come up with a new word.
Do you know how embarrassing it is when my friends down at the VFW club see you with word processors?
That's tremendous. I was kind of disappointed at the beginning of this story because I was really hoping we were going to talk about 50 Cent.
Oh, yes.
Worst. Throwing out the pitch at the Mets game. The worst ever. And but again, this Donald Sterling now has taken the cake. It's tremendous. Outstanding job with trending stories as always, JR. Good job. So I don't know. Who's going to wind up as the owner of the Clippers?
50 Cent. I'm going to say, I don't know. I guess one group, the Guggenheim guys or whatever, they put in a bid tonight. Is that Magic's group?
I don't know. I was going to say, does Magic wind up with the Clippers?
It'd be interesting. I'd definitely say he has a chance. I don't see why he wouldn't. I mean, he's a great owner, even though he's got AIDS.
How can anybody look up to him?
Okay. Goldman Sachs banker hand-delivered a Geffen Ellison Oprah Guggenheim bid for the Clippers. Number not yet known. That was the news tonight out there. So Oprah. I thought Guggenheim, isn't that Magic's group? The Guggenheim.
I don't
Partners?
Know. It's a hell of a
the
name.
Guys that, that's the dudes that own the Dodgers. I think that's them, the Guggenheim.
Listen, if I've got a kid on my, you know, my son's soccer team and his last name is Guggenheim, I'm going to pay attention to who the parents are.
Yes.
Because that name sounds like business.
It does sound like business. So does Oprah.
Justin Guggenheim. Hi, Justin. How are you? Maybe, I'm Coach Kevin.
If my name was Justin Guggenheim, I think Ring of Honor may actually plug our stuff finally.
Listen, why do you got to be like that? What's a brother got to do to get a tweet to get some love from Ring of Honor, right? You're humping that damn show every week with all the recaps. You're putting me in, you're basically an act of benevolence, giving me and Carino podcasts here.
We got a great, thorough weekly honor report. Steven Sutton combing through all the news out there for them, putting over everything they do.
We should be featured on ROHWrestling.com.
Yeah.
But I do think that placetobenation.com gets more traffic. So
probably. It's well much better organized.
That ROH site is horrible.
Yeah.
It's awful.
And they don't have Dan McGinn. That's what we got going for us.
We've got Dan McGinn.
We're lost without him. He's moonlighting for Carino tonight. They're fixing up some of the had to record tonight instead. And so we're kind of lost. We're all off time over here. I don't even know what's going on.
I've lost track. I've lost track of time. All right. Well, we've got a little bit of time left here on the Kevin Kelly Show here on the Place to Be Nation. We're going to play a game here in a little bit. We're going to have some fun and we'll do some more talking and whatnot. Where are we at? Right, we're at break time now.
Let's go to break. Let's take a break. I need a break. I need a sip of water.
I need a break. All right, a quick break, but stick with us. More of the Kevin Kelly Show when we return. I'll break it down for you now, baby. It's simple. If you be an info, I'll be an info. In a hotel or in the back of the rental, on the beach or in the park, it's whatever you into.
What's going on? This is the Godfather, Nate Milton, with an offer you cannot refuse. Each and every week, you can join Marcus Vandenberg, Big Nasty Alfred Kunawa, and myself on the Kings of Sport podcast, available exclusively on placetobenation.com, your one-stop spot for the best in sports and pop culture.
Hey, this is Ben Morse from Marvel.com as well as the Brad and Chad Show, and I've got a new podcast. Well, I'm part of a new podcast, Place to Be Nation's Main Event. Hosted by Scott Criscolo every other week, it's a roundtable discussion with myself, Andrew Reich, Steve Willey, Jordan Duncan, and an assortment of special guests as we talk wrestling today, the big questions, and our feelings. Please, please, please check this podcast out, because if the ratings go down, I know I'm the first head on the chopping block for Justin Rosero. See you guys every other week on Place to Be Nation's Main Event.
I'm Scott Criscolo, and your new home for sports is Place to Be Nation's Extra Point. Join me and the doctor, Giorgio Bellino, for your sports hookup, whether it's NFL, Major League Baseball, NBA, colleges, or the Cowboys MMA Blitz.
Forget about it. Plus, join me for my prescription where I will solve all the world's sports problems with my own brand of medicine.
That's Place to Be Nation's Extra Point here on PlaceToBeNation.com.
In Rhode Island and looking for great food and a fun atmosphere, we'll be sure to stop by Bonehead's Wing Bar, 131 Washington Street in West Warwick, with over 65 different wing sauces and dozens of sandwiches, burgers, and appetizers, and a fully stocked bar. Bonehead's has something for everyone. Bonehead's also shows every WWE and UFC pay-per-view, features live music, weekly trivia, and much, much more. So, be sure to stop in, tell Matt and the crew that Place to Be Nation sent you, and become a Bonehead today.
What's up, wrestling fans? This is Jeff Peck, and you can check out my wrestling podcast, The Still Real to Us Show, every Saturday right here at PlaceToBeNation.com. It is a wrestling podcast from a fan's perspective, and we're not doing it in our mom's basement. So check it out every Saturday right here at PlaceToBeNation.com.
It's still real to me, damn it!
Looking for new wrestling, sports, and pop culture voices? Head over to PlaceToBeNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world. We have an extremely talented staff that covers comics, video games, and all facets of entertainment. Our sports coverage spans all the major professional and collegiate sports, including MMA. Our fresh takes on professional wrestling are some of the best on the internet. Don't forget to check out our fantastic podcasts as well, including the voice of Ring of Honor, Kevin Kelly, exclusively at PlaceToBeNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world. Also, be sure to check out our friends at thehistoryofwwe.com, ProWrestlingOnly.com, Scott Keith blog at RSPWFAQ.net, and PileDriverWrestling.net.
Okay, so we're back on the Kevin Kelly Show here on the Place to Be Nation. We had a lot of fun talking with Sean Grandy earlier on. Because the interview ran a little long, we're going to postpone Twitter Q&A this week. But we'll get back to it on our next episode of the Kevin Kelly Show. I haven't called him yet, and I haven't asked him, but I'm going to put this out there. I want Stevie Richards to be our guest here on the next Kevin Kelly Show. So that will be in 2 weeks, and I have to just reach out and text him or call him or Facebook him or something, and I'll get Stevie on because I want to talk with him because he's awesome. And then we're working on some other things too as we head through the month of June. But we want to thank you for your support. The numbers continue to grow with every episode and the downloads. JR tells you at the beginning where you can find it and spread the news, spread the gospel, spread the word, and tell everybody that you know about the Kevin Kelly Show. Because this episode, JR, I think has been a whole lot of fun. We've had good talk and a few laughs, and we're having a good time. We want people to be part of it.
I agree with that. We want everyone to be a part.
Everybody. All right. So this, I know, of course, while we're not talking about Triple H, it is, however, time to play the game.
Yes. And it's a very fun game this week. Because, Kevin Kelly, this is a game we lifted right off the old Brad and Chad show, like most of this show has been ripped from. Have you ever heard of the old message board, Death Valley Driver review message board, DVDVR?
Sure, okay. Of course.
Were you familiar with the old sleaze thread that generated there?
No.
Okay, so this was this epic thread that slowly began out of nowhere and escalated into madness of everyone and anyone posting every crazy story they've heard about wrestlers doing sleazy and crazy things. I'm going to read you some of these, and I want you to tell me the percentage if they're true or false.
Okay.
Okay.
So if I think something is possibly maybe true, I'd give it 35% true. If there's something that I know is absolutely 100% true, I would say 100% true. And if I think something is completely false, could never happen, I'd say 100% false. Is that right?
You got it.
Okay. All right. Let's play. This sounds fun.
Okay. Need some music to set the mood. All right. Number one, Kevin Kelly. Your hero, Kevin Sullivan, spends his vacations at a nudist colony. Where do we lie with that one?
Ooh, I am going to say, now I know Kevin personally.
Ooh.
I have never vacationed with him.
Never been to Sandals with the Sullivans?
No. Nor have I ever been to a nudist colony. I would say...
Quite a good thing for the people there.
Yeah, I know. Well, listen, based upon the stories that I've heard about these nudist colonies, there's a bunch of saggy old farts there.
Yes.
So I might fit right in.
That is not the place to be.
Gosh, I would say probably 70% true.
Ooh, wow.
I'm going to really lean heavy on this one just because I think Kevin would, you know, a beach guy, an outdoor guy, and probably, you know, wouldn't have any problem airing the bits out. You know what I mean?
I like it. All right, number two, Tommy Rich, the Wildfire, once soaked his balls in a beer mug full of hydrogen peroxide.
Okay. You're putting two things together that automatically raise this up to a higher level of possible trueness. Tommy Rich and beer. Okay, a lot of beer, being drunk, doing crazy things. But I'm only, and again, blonde hair on his head. He wanted the curtain to match the drapes. Right? The carpet to match the drapes. So is he dabbing his ball sack in the hydrogen peroxide? I'm only going to say this is 38% true.
Okay.
Because I don't think Tommy would actually have a beer mug. I think he was just a straight out of the bottle or the can guy. A beer mug is only like a waste of time. So why would he have a beer mug and then put hydrogen peroxide in it? Plus, okay, there's a lot of depth. When you think about it, it's a lot of hydrogen peroxide. You really got to have a saggy pair of balls.
Right. Which is
possible. To get in there. So right. I'm only going to give this 38% true.
Okay. All right. This one you may have a little inside info on. We'll find out. Roddy Piper had a young manservant who traveled with him wherever he went, holding his bags, opening his doors, and Piper and his friends would refer to the young boy as a C-O-C-K sucker, Kevin, as that would be his name.
Well, listen, I can tell you that I'm going to start off by saying that this is probably 80% true because, and it could even be higher, a lot of young boys in the wrestling business and a lot of famous people have carried bags on their way up and have done, you know, jobs for, like, one of the things I did when I first broke in was I drove Blackjack Mulligan around because he was, you know, his eyesight wasn't that great and he had to get to towns. So that's one of the things you do. Now, did he refer to him as that? Yeah, probably. I could see Roddy calling him that, especially if he was. I mean, he's an honest guy, and if that's what the cat was into, then yeah, hey, he's gonna tell it like it is. That's what I love about Roddy Piper.
Okay, so percentage?
80.
Okay, strong. All right, we're back to the Wildfire here. Tommy Rich did some favors to Jim Barnett in exchange for an NWA world title run.
You know what? This is one of the, what do they call those things? The urban legend, right?
Yes, yep.
I got to go, I can't go more than 50% on this because I can't prove it. I can't say it didn't happen. I can't say it did.
Mm.
It is probably one of the hottest rumors that has lived in wrestling now for 34 years. And has never been definitively answered one way or the other. You know, now if we're talking about Missy Hyatt and you know, things that she's done, she answered most of those questions right in her book. So I'm sure she would have some thoughts. Missy Hyatt might be an interesting guest.
I've been trying to get her to listen to the show. She's always talking about podcasts on the show, and I've hit her up a few times, but she said her her archive is quite large right now. Can't fit another one in, but maybe we get you like that. Maybe we can get Missy on. Maybe we can get Missy on. She's a pretty cool follow on Twitter. I don't know if you follow her at all. She's always watching old wrestling and tweeting about it, world class, right, and all this other stuff.
Yeah, it's interesting. So I gotta go. I can't on this last one about Tommy Rich, the urban legend. 50-50. I can't. You know, Carino would be an interesting one to ask about this.
All right, number five. They had to break Bruiser Brody's legs to fit him in a cheap Puerto Rican casket.
No, that's like 2% true. First of all, I'm sure he was buried. He wasn't buried in Puerto Rico, was he? They probably sent him back. Oh, I would imagine he was flown back after he was murdered in Puerto Rico. Mm-hmm. That he was flown back to the States where he was, you know, I'm sure, buried, or may have been cremated. Who knows? But I can't imagine he was buried in Puerto Rico. Now, if he was buried in Puerto Rico, be lucky if he got a box.
Right.
Let alone, because that place, have you ever been to Puerto Rico?
Yes, I have.
What did you think of it?
Well, I can't say I ventured far out of old San Juan where we were, because we were there for a couple days before we went on a cruise. So the areas I was at were cool, but I didn't really venture out into the weird parts of the island at all.
I thought it was like the Bronx in the summertime.
Not where I was, so I won't say that.
Yeah, I just didn't care for it that much. I know my good friend Kerry Silken loves Puerto Rico and spends a lot of time down there, but he hangs out at the beach. So, I don't know. I just never was that impressed. A horrible, corrupt island. And if Bruiser Brody was buried in Puerto Rico, I would say yes. Lucky if he got the pine box at all. Would have had to have his legs broken because the casket would have been so cheap. But I would say 2% true, because I think his body was shipped back to the U.S. where arrangements were made for his final resting place.
All right. Number six, your boy Virgil got a job by unleashing his hose on Pat Patterson's desk.
Well, okay.
I like him really thinking about it.
Yeah, I'm putting the... all right, so Pat did have a desk. He... At Titan Towers. I don't know if Virgil, you know, who knows? Maybe it just could have barely, you know, made it past the paperweight. I don't know. I would say 43% true. Little less than 50-50. It could have happened. I don't know. Maybe that was what put it over the top, you know, after... The idea had already been floated by, and maybe that's what, you know, sealed the deal. But that kind of smells a little fishy to me. He's a creep, by the way, that Virgil.
Is he?
Oh, what a creep.
Just because of now or just always?
I'll tell you a true story about him. I used to live up in the Poconos in northeast corner of Pennsylvania. And when I was working at a radio station, I used to call on an MRI place. I can't remember the name of the office, but the office manager, very nice woman, and one of the local doctors was seeing Virgil Virgil was seeing him as a patient, and so was sending Virgil over all the time for like MRIs. And when he would get there, he would be a complete creep to the women in the office, and was just like, you know, trying to get prescriptions, and was just a mess. And everybody hated him. They knew I worked in wrestling, and they were like, oh, you know that Virgil? And I'm like, well, kind of, sort of. Oh, he's a creep. And they would tell me stories. I'd be like, oh, great. Don't blame me for him. He is a creep. So that's 100% true. Creep.
100% certified creep.
Yes.
All right, number seven. Kerry Von Erich really had his foot amputated because he thought he could walk across a room on the just surgically repaired foot for a cheeseburger, and then he crushed it.
Now, is this Ring of Honor's cheeseburger? Because that that kid is so over with New Japan, by the way.
Is he?
Yeah, Jushin Thunder Liger loved him and taught him the palm strike.
Very nice.
So, yeah. Was Kerry Von Erich's foot really there? Yes. And this story is 100% false.
So, you know, I thought it was known that his foot was actually amputated.
I'll tell you why I think this is 100% false. And I could be wrong.
Okay.
Because somebody who did jobs in the WWF saw the boot off, and there was like this horribly mangled, gangrenous looking foot still inside of it.
Okay, so it was effed up, but it wasn't amputated.
Yeah, right. So it wasn't a wooden block or whatever you'd have. You know, it wasn't a
wooden block. I didn't realize he was a pirate out in the
he was
Indian Ocean.
You know, it was rudimentary. It was not. You know, listen, as
Arr, I'm gonna put you in the claw hold.
Could there be? I mean, we have Zach Gowen, of course, who never wrestled with a leg with his, you know, with his prosthetic leg. But could there be a, you know, an Oscar Pistorius? Hopefully, Oscar Pistorius. Hopefully, not kill allegedly his girlfriend. But you know, could somebody wrestle in prosthetics? Could that happen in 2014 and beyond? Has medical science moved beyond the Kerry Von Erich wooden block for a foot, which is just made up on my part? What do you think?
Aye, scurvy. You're gonna sell me discus punch.
That's what he would say. Now if that was the promo.
The pirate tornado.
And they wanted to, well, they have Jean-Pierre Lafitte with him.
Yes.
And they wanted to make Mike Rotundo actually the captain of the varsity club. They wanted to make him like a boat captain. So he started coming out in the pea coat with the corncob pipe and the hat. So, yeah, that would have been quite a team.
Arr, where can we score some smack?
Arr, I need me a cheeseburger. Oh, my God. All right, is there more sleaze?
We got plenty of sleaze. We're going to do a few more here tonight, but there's like hundreds of these things, so we're going to be doing this for weeks to come.
Let's do 10, and then we'll stop.
Okay, sounds good. So, number 8, NWA World Champion Gene Kaniski bought Kevin Von Erich a hooker in Las Vegas when Kevin was only 12.
Okay. I would say this is probably 74% true. Because A, you're in Las Vegas.
Yeah.
So that part of the story checks out. Gene Kaniski from Canada could have been a good rib, on Fritz. Let's buy his kid a hooker.
Well, let me ask you this, Kevin. How old were you when you had your first hooker?
I wouldn't know that. Uh-huh. I have never been in the company of a lady. In that I had to pay
for. Oh, okay. I was going to say, we're breaking real ground here tonight.
Yeah, we're really coming out. Yeah. Actually, no, I was in...
Have you ever seen the 40-year-old... No.
Okay. Have you? There was a... Where was I? I forget where I was. And you know, in the hotel room waiting to go to the show, early in the afternoon, knock, 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 who's at the door? And it was a lady of the evening in the afternoon. And she was trying to... You know, basically talk her way in. I was like, no, sorry. And she was crackhead.
You were like, hard. Hold on, come in. Let me get Michael Cole and we'll get down to business.
Hang on a second. Business.
And then business. You could be like, no one saw any of the explosions. All right, what do we got for a percentage on this one?
I said 74%. I said very strongly.
Okay.
I believe it. Rene Dupree, when he was like 13 in the Maritimes, Rip Rogers told me the story that he was working out in the gym and he saw this, you know, kind of this jacked up young guy, and he didn't realize it was Rene Dupree. He was 13 at the time, and he's talking about, look at the, you know, this one and that one, and look at this, and I did this to this one, and he realized after he got done, he said, hey, what was your name again? Oh, I'm Rene Dupree. I'm the promoter's kid. So, yeah, pretty much anything could happen with wrestling. There is no shame in that, and as a good rib on Fritz, I could see Gene Kaniski buying Kevin Von Erich a hooker at the age of 12. Right, now, if it was a 12-year-old hooker, that'd be a whole different story.
Yes, or it could have been one of Fabulous Moolah's midget friends.
That's right, the midget.
All right, we got a couple more Von Erich ones to finish up here. A coked up Kerry and Kevin were once playing with a saw blade in the back hallways at the Sportatorium. Kerry saw a cat, threw the blade at it, and killed it.
I would say 86% true.
Wow.
They were maniacs. Stories in the day of them being like so amplified with the Warrior on whatever it was, speed or whatever it is they had taken, and just running in the apartment complex screaming like lunatics, you know, anything. Yeah. You know, if America's Got Talent was around back in the early 80s in Dallas, throwing a saw blade at a cat and killing it, I think that could have gotten Kerry on the show. I think the judges would have been impressed. Yes. Horrified. But
Howie Mandel would have loved it.
He would have loved it. Howard right. Stern would have applauded the other two. I'm not so sure.
All right, one more. Here we go. Another cat, Kerry Von Erich story. Kerry Von Erich sees a cat in the All Japan locker room, puts the iron claw on it, and kills the kitty.
He has a, I don't know whether he has a love affair with cats or he hates cats. Iron claw. It really wouldn't be much of an iron claw. It'd be more like Mulligan when he crushed the apple with his hand. I'm going to say 22% true. It just sounds like shenanigans to me.
It does. It does sound made up. So, all right, there's your game. There's your sleeves. We'll do this one every few shows or so. We'll
I love these. It.
Yeah, we got some really good ones still to come. I like our music, too.
All right, now it's time for pay-per-view picks.
Yeah, so, Kevin, I think you went, 6-2? Extreme Rules for a guy that
isn't... Considering I didn't watch a second of the television leading up.
Now, have you watched anything at all lately?
Nope. Okay. Not since WrestleMania.
Okay. So, Payback is this Sunday, June 1st, which is a big day here at Placement Nation, Kevin. It's the one-year anniversary of the launch of the website, June 1st, 2013.
I thought it was the day we were finally going to get paid back.
It's like
paid cash.
No. It's also your friend Scott Criscolo's 41st birthday.
He's older than 41? He's only 41?
He's only 41.
See, you mock him for being old, and I'm 6 years older than he is.
Yeah, but I mock you for being old as well.
Good point. All right, so what's the... give me some matches here, because I don't even know the card.
All right, we're back on the pre-show with some more midget action after the WLC was fantastic, Extreme Rules. They come back with a mask versus hair match. Torito versus Hornswoggle.
By Hornswoggle's hair. That's Torito's winning this one.
No doubt. I think
no doubt.
Hornswoggle's been growing that mane just to this moment, I think. So.
Exactly.
All right, we have the Divas title on the line as Paige takes on Alicia Fox, who's been doing kind of this crazy gimmick as of late. I don't know if you've seen anything about this. She's been pretty good with it. Paige puts the title on the line against her.
Are we still building towards AJ?
The word is she'll be back after the wedding. So we'll see.
I would say Paige retains as we point towards AJ and the inevitable potential money match that could be down the road.
Okay. We have the Intercontinental title on the line. Wade Barrett defending against Rob Van Dam.
Barrett needs it. Rob Van Dam doesn't. We'll go with Wade Barrett retaining a controversial finish, pull the tights or some foot on the rope type of deal.
Okay. In a rare occurrence, the U.S. title is also on the line. As Sheamus defends against Cesaro. Who do you like here?
Well, I mean, obviously, I like Cesaro a lot. He's already been the U.S. champ. I don't think the belt does him any good. I think Sheamus retains via DQ some shenanigans going on here. Are they getting towards separating Cesaro and Paul Heyman?
You would think so at some point, but
yeah.
There's real slight rumors out there that he could split leading to a Cesaro Brock match.
Yeah. But I think they could, again, you could do the old collision. Some simple, it's not going to be convoluted. It'll be pretty simple to digest. Either they're turning him or they're not turning him, and they're splitting him or they're not splitting him. But I think Sheamus retains.
Okay. Last man standing, John Cena and Bray Wyatt go at it once again. Third show in a row.
This the blow off?
I would think it has to be.
I got to go with Cena. Good, though. They, from all accounts, this has been, from what I've read, this has been very good.
Yeah.
Both guys.
It's meandered on a little bit long at spots, but I think Bray's coming out of it. After the Mania mess, I think the month since then was, he was coming out of it a little bit stronger. So we'll see where they go with that. And the main event, The Shield versus Evolution in an elimination match.
I think Roman Reigns is the last member of The Shield standing, eliminating Triple H. At the end, what do you think?
I'm going to keep my pick to myself on this one for now.
But okay. Why?
I got reasons.
Are you betting?
No,
are you a betting man? Are you,
I do not condone betting or gambling on any level.
Oh, I do.
Well, good. You can.
I love it.
That's awesome.
So I'm going to go with The Shield wins with Roman Reigns. That's the easiest. I'm going very simple on this show.
Okay.
Sometimes I think you can have a show that has a lot of simple outcomes that people understand, and it's like, yeah, you could do that. And then there's times where you want to throw the swerves and curves at them.
Gotta throw the swerve, baby.
Hey, they would never expect it. Well, it's the last reason you ever want to do anything.
One other thing that's going on at the show, Daniel Bryan is supposed to come out and give his decision. If he does not forfeit the title, Brie Bella will be fired. If he does, then she will keep her job. What do you think happens?
I think he hands over the title because he's a man. And I think, or Brie Bella does something where she falls on the sword and quits or something like that, you know?
Yeah, there's a couple of things I've seen. You know, one, they're saying Brian's going to give it up and that it's going to be on the line at Money in the Bank on the ladder match. The other is that he's not as hurt, like we heard earlier in the Flash, that he's being advertised already.
Whoever that guy is that does the Flash, outstanding job.
Yeah, he is pretty good. Handsome, too. But
thank
he,
God. It's a podcast. How do we know?
Yeah. So he, that could be one of the things, or he is going to be back. And I like your idea. Like you said, Brie kind of takes the bullet for him. We also went shocking to see Vince McMahon come out and tell Stephanie to F off and doesn't allow Brian to drop or Brie to get fired, something along those lines.
Wow.
Throw him out.
Okay.
All right.
That could happen.
Those are your picks. So you took Torito, Cena, The Shield, Paige, Wade Barrett, and Sheamus. So we'll track that in the next episode of the show. Kevin, real quick, your network pick of the week from me is King of the Ring 93, the first King of the Ring pay-per-view coming up on the 21-year anniversary of that show.
Yeah.
A great show. Three great matches of Bret Hart. Beat Razor Ramon in the first round. An absolute classic with Mr. Perfect in the second round. And then a really fun final against Bam Bam Bigelow. Had Hulk Hogan's final appearance in the WWF for 9 years when he lost to Yokozuna with the camera flash bulb going off. And a couple other fun matches mixed in as well. You got JR, Savage, and Bobby on commentary. And you have the awesome Hillbilly family out in Dayton in the crowd that Terry Taylor talks to with Wesley and his hick father. So check that out. King of the Ring 93, JR's recommendation.
I got to get the WWE Network.
Yes, will you please?
All right, I will. I never have time to watch it. What do I know?
You can watch it anywhere. Your iPad, your phone.
I don't have an iPad.
Hmm.
How do I watch things on my phone? I call people on my phone.
All right. You need the Michael Cole tutorial.
I do. I need help. I need help. We got to go through this at some point because I got to figure out how to watch things. Like I have Chromecast, right?
Yeah.
And the only thing I can do with Chromecast is I can watch YouTube videos on my phone and then make them appear on my television.
It's magic.
Isn't that, can I do anything else with Chromecast or did I spend $35 to watch YouTube videos on my television?
No, they should be all apps and stuff. I don't know. I don't have Chromecast, so I'm not positive. Right. I have Roku.
Japanese guy.
All right, wrap this up. Let's go.
That's it. We're done?
Yeah, that's all we got.
Okay. We've got the big news with Ring of Honor, of course, is pay-per-view as we're gearing towards that on Sunday, June 22nd in Nashville, Tennessee, best in the world. So go to ROHWrestling.com for all the information on that. Big weekend of television as well, and I hope you can tune in for that. What else is happening? Go to ROHWrestling.com and you'll see everything. I'm still kind of in the, you know, hangover phase from the New Japan events. You know, I haven't put my ROH hat back on in a while and, it's been kind of nice, but, I hope everybody had a nice Memorial Day and a good weekend coming up. I got to thank Sean Grandy for being an awesome guest and, just taking time out of his schedule to, be a part of this show. And thanks to JR and for setting that up, and Dan as well for his help and everything with the site. Make sure you check out placetobenation.com this week. Do me a favor. Do yourself a favor. Go read the articles. Go listen to the other shows because there's a lot of great content on this site. It is one of the few sites that I actually do visit and do listen to and watch, and I enjoy it. So you should too. I've got to get on the horn with Stevie Richards. I'm going to try to book him as a guest for 2 weeks. If not, we'll have him soon. And if it's not Stevie, it'll be somebody. Trust me, we'll have a guest. We always do. It's the Kevin Kelly Show here on the Place to Be Nation. And we thank you very much once again for joining us.
The Grandy Man can.
Because I'm not involved.
And the cat's in the cradle and the silver spoon. Little boy blue and the moon.